If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Chris Parenti, he is a former federal prosecutor, and he is a partner of Sharonis and Parenti, and we've had Damon Sharonis on our show quite a bit, talking about the high-profile cases this firm handles. They are aggressive and effective advocates for people charged with federal, white-collar, violent crimes, drug and sex crimes. He's here to talk a little bit about the Broadview 6, although maybe it's Broadway. Hi, Chris. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Karen. Nice to be on.
Thanks for stepping in. Let's talk about the Broadview 6. Tell our listeners who they are and what happened.
Yeah, this is, you know, six individuals who all went to Broadview, as many hundreds of people did over the past few months, to sort of protest some of the atrocities that we've read about that are going on, that were going on inside that facility. And while there, you know, one of these Border Patrol vehicles sort of drove into where they were all standing, and the government has done something you don't see often. It's called a 372 conspiracy, and they charged these six demonstrators with, you know, conspiring to injure this agent and his vehicle, although the only actual damage that happened was a broken windshield wiper and somebody had etched in some writings on the side of this vehicle. So it's a very unusual case. You know, it happens that five of the six individuals who were indicted are Democratic candidates or Democratic-leaning public officials. And so, you know, I think what you'll see eventually is that these individuals were targeted more for that reason, which is what we've seen with Governor Walz and Mayor Frey in Minnesota just as well, which, by the way, the charge that the government is looking at those two for is the same 372 charge that these people are indicted with.
Let's talk, before I circle back with the Broadview 6, there's a woman named Marimar Martinez, and she was charged with, she was shot five times, and yet she was charged. Can you tell our listeners exactly what happened, where she was, what she was doing, how she was shot, and what she was charged with?
Yeah, so, you know, our firm also represented Marimar Martinez. So on October 4th, you know, Marimar Martinez is essentially just like Miss Good and Mr. Preddy from Minneapolis, except she survived this attempted execution, right? She was driving on October 4th. She was actually on her way to drop off clothes at her local church charity drive when she saw an ICE vehicle in her community. And to be clear, Marimar Martinez is born and raised in Chicago. She's a U.S. citizen. She's actually a Montessori school teacher, no criminal history, never even a parking ticket. And when she saw ICE in her community, she's kind of seen what was going on, so she started beeping her horn, warning her neighbor, similar to, you know, the whistle system we have where I live in Oak Park. And eventually this agent, you know, as they're driving, swerves into her. She stops, they stop, and she looks up and seeing what has happened, she knew that she was in danger of probably being dragged out of her car and possibly even worse. So she drove away to a safe space. And as she did that, the agent jumped out of his vehicle and unloaded five rounds of his firearm into her body. She miraculously survives and is rewarded with being charged by the U.S. government with attempting to actually ram the government's vehicle and branded a domestic terrorist, you know, very similar to Miss Good and Mr. Preddy, which they did in Minneapolis, right away. So fast forward, obviously she hires us. We actually look into the case and very quickly realize that this is all sort of nonsense, that none of what the agents were saying actually happened. And eventually the U.S. Attorney's Office drops all the charges against her.
And so that was your job to gather the evidence and sort of convince the prosecutors that this was not a prosecution they were going to win.
Exactly. I mean, you've seen that consistently. They've lost, I think, almost every prosecution in this Operation Midway Blitz. And again, as a former federal prosecutor, I can tell you, right, prior to this, I mean, the conviction rate at the feds is, I think, 94%. When I was there, you know, I never lost a case. And it's because, you know, you do the work up front. Like, you do the investigation. You go out and you do everything that I did for Ms. Martinez, but you do it as the prosecutor before you, you know, permanently damage someone's reputation and brand them as a domestic terrorist. They haven't been doing that, right? They're charging now. They're getting the quick press releases that this administration wants with very little seeming to care about whether they actually get a conviction. And so in this case, To me, it was very quickly apparent that the agents were just not telling the truth about what happened, that they did, in fact, hit her. She never hit them, and that they were never going to win this at a trial.
Before we take a break, I just want to interject a question that, you know, it comes to mind. You know, you were a former prosecutor, and when I used to do a little bit of criminal defense work, I agree with you. When you went and faced a charge by federal prosecutors, it was daunting because they did their work. They had the homework done. They had the case. They had everything locked up. And, you know, a lot of it was plea bargaining because they were going to win. And like you said, it was a very high percentage rate. Do you see among the prosecutors that you're dealing with in the Chicago area, are the prosecutors happy with the way things are going? Or is there an attitude that they don't want to be bringing these charges that they may have some moral questions about?
Look, what I can say is, and you know, look, I'm friends with a lot of current prosecutors. I'm friends with a lot of former prosecutors. I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's no secret that many prosecutors have left that office, you know, since this election. What I can say, though, is all of these people that I've worked with, you know, they understand they took that job to do the right thing. And I truly believe that that's what they do. And look, in this case, I mean, this was a high profile case. This was being cited by the White House as one of the reasons they needed to bring the National Guard into this state. So for as much criticism as I have of the U.S. Attorney's Office right now, which I do, you know, the U.S. Attorney, Andrew Boutros, it must have taken incredible courage to tell his bosses that he is going to dismiss one of the most high-profile cases in the country at the time, where, you know, DHS and Kristi Noem are out there saying this woman's a domestic terrorist and she tried to kill an ICE agent, when this U.S. attorney, who is a Trump appointee, you know, has the courage to say, you know what, the evidence isn't here, we'll never win this case, and he dismissed it. So I do credit him with that, and again, I credit all these federal prosecutors for doing the right thing. Eventually, I just wish they would do it sooner and not charge people until they're convinced that they can win at trial. And again, this, you know, Miramar Martinez, one, she's suffering from 5 bullet holes in her body. She's in physical therapy. She's a Montessori school teacher who can't even hold a pen right now. So she's got to deal with that. And she's got to deal with, if you Google her name, people think she's a domestic terrorist. Like, we're going to have to fight that until she dies, unfortunately.
And I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that when we come back, Chris, about obtaining some records so that hopefully she can at some point clear her name. We're talking to Chris Parente. He is a former federal prosecutor. He's a criminal defense lawyer with a great firm of Sharonis and Parente. And could you just give out your contact information or your website for our listeners?
Sure, it's www.sharonislaw.com.
We were talking about the case of Miramar Martinez, and she was the woman who was shot 5 times. The charges were brought. Your firm was able to convince the prosecutors to drop the case. And now you guys were back in court this week, and what are you seeking, Chris?
We're seeking the lifting or the amending of the protective order, right? And a protective order is just something that's entered in most criminal cases where it sort of is meant to protect the privacy of either victims or witnesses so that defense attorneys can't give out discovery to, you know, so in the case of Ms. Martinez, you know, we can't like give out the reports that have the Border Patrol agents' names in it. And that's sort of customary. The thing that happened here is bizarre to me is even though the U.S. Attorney's Office dismissed the case, sort of acknowledging that, you know, they were wrong, DHS and Kristi Noem and Tricia McLaughlin, the press secretary, or the assistant secretary there, they keep putting out this narrative, even after the DOJ dismissed the case with prejudice, that Ms. Martinez is a domestic. They repeat the same thing. She's a domestic terrorist. She drove at the agents. She rammed them. Like, all of those things are objectively not true, and they know it's not true, and it's in the discovery that it's not true. And yet, I can't release that stuff to the media, which is what we want to do, because of this protective order. So we went back before the judge and said, Judge, this is one of those rare circumstances where her own government is continuing to defame her day after day, even though they dismissed all the charges against her. So you can't have it both ways. You can't be putting out press releases saying she's a domestic terrorist who ran these agents and then handcuffing us when we have the actual evidence to show people that those are lies. But we can't release it. And so I think, you know, that this judge understands it. In fact, there's a Supreme Court case where Justice Alito, in a dissent, is citing the same facts, which are unfortunately wrong. And the judge was angered by that. She's like, how could you not correct, you know, this so it doesn't end up in a Supreme Court opinion? And the judge has seen a lot of this. So it's one of those rare circumstances where, you know, you have a certain branch of the government, I think it's just because of the time that we live in, that is continuing to put out false information, and the U.S. Attorney's Office is caught in the middle because, you know, they know that they dismissed the case because it's not true.
And it just seems to me that lately we've seen more and more lawyers, you know, going to court to get civil remedies. And I'm not, you know, what you're doing is civil in nature because you would like to have this released. And we're seeing people who are bringing lawsuits and in so doing having the evidence preserved and publicized, because it just seems that, you know, in the event that there's not going to be a criminal investigation into wrongdoing by anybody. And listen, Chris, is it fair to say that when there's a police shooting or an ICE officer shooting, you know, there's usually an investigation into whether it was a good shoot or a bad shoot, right? I mean, is that normally the case?
Normally, I mean, I was shocked. So I got to cross-examine the agent that shot Ms. Martinez because we had a hearing over the destruction of evidence. So he actually had to testify with her in the room, and I got to cross him. And, you know, my questions were, you know, were you suspended? And he said no. And he was back at work, you know, right afterwards. And I said, were you even interviewed by, like, your internal people? He's like, no, they told me that wouldn't even happen until after the trial. Now, obviously, there is no trial, and there never will be, but that's the shocking stuff that we've never seen before. And I mean, can you imagine working for a company where when somebody in the company does something terrible, there's not even an investigation? Like, that is going to lead, and it has led to Minneapolis, to other agents seeing, hey, we're protected here. We have absolute immunity. Our bosses not only don't care, they seem to kind of celebrate when we do this. So that's why you're seeing these continued executions, because they're getting that message that their employer doesn't care about this. There won't actually be an investigation. And in fact, they're sort of embraced and celebrated, which is frightening to me.
I have a texter who is questioning the issue. You use the numbers 372. Can you tell our listeners what that is, a 372 charge?
Yeah, it's Title 18 United States Code Section 372. And again, that's what the government is looking at Governor Walz and Mayor Frey for, and what they're looking at, what they charge the Broadview 6 with, right? And it's scary, because what they're saying is that these demonstrators that were at Broadview conspired together. Now, look, a few things here. One, these people never even knew each other, right? I mean, one of the people, like, they had their staffer there, and that was a co-conspirator, so they knew each other. But none of the other people knew each other. They didn't plan to go there together. They didn't talk when they were there. They're all independent people. So the government's right under this theory. What they can do is, at any demonstration, I'm talking a No Kings rally, a women's march, a pride parade, any cause that brings a bunch of people together, if this theory is allowed to go forward, any demonstrator is technically on the hook for something that anyone else does, right? Because these six people, as far as the broken windshield wiper go and the etching on the car, it wasn't any of those six. It was other, you know, some of the other hundreds of people at Broadview that day. But these people are being held accountable for that under this crazy theory that demonstrators are now co-conspirators. So think about that. Like, and this is done intentionally, right? It's done so that this administration will keep people from going to the No Kings rally, will keep people from going to the women's march, will keep people from going to the abortion march. Whatever the cause it is, if they're allowed to move forward with this charging theory that you're on the hook for other people at a demonstration, that's scary. I mean, that's next level, and I think that's why, thankfully, all six of these people are going to fight this to the end, and they're going to win it. We're going to win it. And I think, you know, you'll see Governor Walz fight it as well as Mayor Frey, to the extent that the government decides to bring the same charge against them.
Let's just talk generally about criminal defense cases. I know your firm was trying a case this week that was in the papers. It was about an extortion charge, and it was kind of high profile and interesting and having to do with the restaurant industry. And I won't go into the facts of it because I know you're still representing this gentleman, and they're probably going to be post-trial and appeals and that kind of thing. But just a general question, you know, when you try a case before a jury and you lose it, and you know, as a criminal defense lawyer, like you say, if it's a federal charge, your chances of losing are pretty good. You're bound by the facts and the law. So, you know, all of the great skills that you and your partner have maybe can't make this go away. But when you lose a case, how hard is it on you? How hard is it to know that when you lose a case, someone goes to prison for a long time?
It's hard. You know, I had the unique perspective of, you know, I started as a defense attorney at a big firm. And so, you know, I didn't do much criminal work, but I was then a federal prosecutor for 14 years, both in Miami and in Chicago. And again, as I said earlier, you know, I won every case, right? So I probably had 30 jury trials. I won every case. Now, I did human trafficking work, white collar crimes against children. So to me, it always, federal prosecutors always charge cases they believe in. I believe in every one of my cases. When these human traffickers got sentenced to 30 plus years, you know, it was something that, because I could go back to the victims, it was something that we were pleased with. Being on the defense side, it is heartbreaking. And honestly, I think every prosecutor should work on the defense side, because you need to, one, it helps with empathy, and two, you see it from the other side. And sometimes I think when you're a prosecutor, you just think, oh, numbers, like, oh, 31 years, 30 years, 12 years, it's just a number. And when you're sitting down with these people, I mean, every day matters. And it's heartbreaking at times. And it's why prosecutors need to be held to such a high standard, which is why when they charge these nonsense cases like the Broadview 6, like, they're going to put these six people, none who have criminal history, who are politicians and people who are like community activists and people who do good work for the community. They're going to hold their lives on hold. They're going to put their lives on hold for the next year, going under extreme mental stress, financial stress, for a broken windshield wiper on a DHS vehicle. Like, what are we doing? The U.S. Attorney's Office needs to reevaluate how they're allocating their resources. This is a senior public corruption prosecutor who will be out of duty for the next year on this case over a broken windshield wiper. Why can she not be reassigned to cases that the people in this district actually care about? The human trafficking cases, crimes against children, public corruption, anything else that actually matters. That's kind of where it sort of gets to me.
Chris Pronti, thank you so much for joining us. Quickly, can you give us your contact information?
Sure. You can reach us at it's Sharonis and Parenti. The website is www.sharonislaw.com.